Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic. I want to welcome you to today's very special topic, which is the topic of the self-help Jung and living the symbolic life, which is, interestingly enough, one of the names of the books. It's the last book in the collected works called The Symbolic Life. It's a collection of different essays, letters, introductions, books, seminars from Jung. It's really a grab bag of different topics. And first, we have to clarify, what is the symbolic life? So the symbolic life, Jung says, is, you see, man is in need of a symbolic life, badly in need. We only live banal, ordinary, rational, or irrational things, which are naturally also within the scope of rationalism. Otherwise, you could not call them irrational. But we have no symbolic life. Where do we live symbolically? Nowhere, except where we participate in the ritual of life. But who among the many are really participating in the ritual of life? That's a very good question. And this is what this event will be about. And one question I got very often from people when I told them that I read all the books by Jung, they say, okay, so what is like the one key insight? What is the one key idea that holds everything together? And I think I have an answer for that. And it ties right into today's event because the second question I then get is like, okay, how do I apply that in my normal everyday life? How can I have Jung more in my life, in my actions, in my thoughts, and so on, to say like, okay, I'm living Jungian, I'm living the symbolic life. And the very much condensed version of Jung's work is life is about experiencing yourself. And this is what we will talk about today in all its aspects. So we will talk about life, we will talk about experiencing, and we're going to talk about yourself. And we're going to start with life. So life is basically an exploration of you. That means Jung sees our psyche and our experience completely connected to us. When we do something, when we experience something, it's always connected to us and our consciousness. So Jung sees the structure of the psyche that we, perceiving ourselves, how we are right now, this he calls ego. In German, das Ich. And this is where everything is connected in consciousness. Meaning everything that we know, experience, and can do is connected then to the ego because it lived through it. Like we lived through third grade or we went to Malta or something else. We met specific people. So it's all connected to the I. This is why all these sentences have I. And it's not only that these things are connected to us, but also they are kind of filtering our reality. And the kind of experiences we make are based very much on what kind of person we are. So Jung has a quote about that. The occurrences of everyday life are nothing but association experiments on a major scale. The things outside us are the stimulus words to which we react according to what we are and have become, and never in any other way. No one can get out of his own skin. We have a specific term in there, this association experiment. And it's really interesting that very few people know this about Jung, but when Jung started out in his late 20s, and worked at Burghursley, he did scientific experiments and used the association experiment, which meant he would give a word to a patient and the patient would reply. And that could be then, for example, father or family or sky or anything. And what Jung did and was super interesting, he would check, okay, what kind of reaction is it? Is it a noun? Is it a verb? Is it a sentence? Or is it even a sound that the person makes? And the interesting thing is that he could already map the unconscious, so the lower part, the unavailable part of our psyche, by the fact that people took a very long time to react then on the word, because they kind of get distracted. It would be bam, 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 stimulus reaction, but suddenly there would be a long pause. And the interesting thing is he would repeat then the same word again after some time, and the patient would give a different answer on that. The reaction would be different. When they said before a sentence, they would make a sound. Meaning, for these specific words that he took the longest, the patient, they could not remember what they said. So it was not them saying something. And Jung sees there a kind of interplay between the world and us, and that we automatically react to things. And sometimes it's us, how we are, what we know, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes there's something else inside of us that reacts, and we are not really aware of that. And this is a huge staple of Jungian psychology. So he says this something in our psyche wants to kind of come out. In a sense, it's us, it's future us that wants to break out of the psyche, come into the world, and experience itself, or wants to be experienced by us. So this is what the other quote is about. My life is a story of the self-realization of the unconscious. Everything in the unconscious seeks outward manifestation, and the personality, too, desires to evolve out of unconscious conditions and to experience itself as a whole. This is something that's easier for us to understand if we compare ourselves to what we were as children, for example. Like, we as children were already a kind of person, a certain personality, but we did not know our strength yet. We did not know what kind of preferences we had, what we did not like, how we like to live our lives. We had to learn this. It had to come out of our psyche and be integrated into consciousness. And Jung says this process never really stops. So life, in a sense, is this constantly coming up of contents that are you. And this is then the journey of life that we take. And a very big thing about Jungian psychology, and what makes it then again a bit mystical and very, very interesting, is the concept of perception. Because our perception shifts. This is another very big Jungian thing, that based on who we are, how we have completely different reactions and completely different experiences of the world. So what you are is what you see, which is incredibly hard concept to get and understand until you lived through it, until you realized and had the experience that very, very much the condition you are in and the views you have and the attitudes you have a huge influence how you perceive the world, because the world always feels very, very objective. And this is what Jung writes here about. Everything known is filtered through the psyche. It is psychified. The very fact that we know something, anything at all, is grounded in the being of the psyche. We cannot stand what extends beyond it. So our consciousness and how we are is a kind of filter in the world. It really much influences that what we see and what we can perceive. So the world outside is not really objective, but rather it's a subjective experience filtered through our psyche, through like colored lenses that we have on top of us, our eyes, that we are not completely aware of because we always wear them. It's like this example, when you're in a dream, you only realize it afterwards when you woke up. But while you're in a dream, it all seems very real. And similar, it's with your psyche. Everything seems to absolute and convincing when you're in the situation. I have the example of John Peterson because I want to share a little bit of an example. And this is already a practical thing. So Peterson very often talked about to clean one's room. And this is to learn diligence and to like control or change what you can actually control and change. But I had the experience last year, which was really interesting, that I decided purposefully I would try to fix all the problems and all the things that bothered me in my own apartment. And I thought I maybe had like three things. Some stains, something broken, and so on. So I made a list and I wrote down these things. And I would do these things. And by doing these things, suddenly my apartment would shift and change in experience. And suddenly I would see new problems. And I thought, that's weird. Where are they coming from? I did not notice this before. So it was really solving certain things and changing one's goal changes the perception of the world around one.
Hi, Markus here. If you want to go deeper into this topic, there's a full presentation available as a video recording with diagrams, quotes, and visuals for a deeper understanding. The recording is available as a one-time purchase on Gumroad, yours to keep. All right, back to the topic. Enjoy.
And this is purely psychological. The apartment was always the same. The stains and the broken stuff, that was for me always the same, objectively, but I could not see it. And this is what is meant here with the psyche influences how we perceive things and what we're able to perceive. This is really the thing. How we are, what we know, and what we've integrated highly, highly, highly influences what we're able to perceive. So another quote by Jung. It is certainly true that external circumstances are the cause of internal reactions, but the external cause is merely one condition of the reaction. The other condition is always the nature of the one reacting. It's always you. It's always you participating in the seemingly objective world. But it does not really seem like this, especially when you're starting out, right, psychologically. So learning this differentiating and separating from that, this is also Jung. So how is one supposed to live one's life when it's somehow all related to one and all it's filtered through one's personality and one's psyche? And it's really one step after the other. And this is why I showed you the card of the hermit from Tarot, because the hermit can never look farther than his own feet. He has his lamp and he looks down. And in Jungian sense, that's already enough. And this is what this quote is about. Your individual way, it is a way you make for yourself, which is never prescribed, which you do not know in advance, and which simply comes into being of itself when you put one foot in front of the other. If you always do the next thing that needs to be done, you will go most safely and surely-footedly along the path prescribed by your unconscious. Then it is naturally no help at all to speculate about how you ought to live. And then you know too that you cannot know it, but quietly do the next and most necessary thing. So long as you think you don't yet know what it is, you still have too much money to spend in useless speculation. But if you do with conviction the next and most necessary thing, you are always doing something meaningful and intended by fate. This plays into the quote of Jung earlier, where he said, oh, it's his personality that unfolds out of the psyche, which is born out of the psyche. It's a similar way for us. It is some unconscious contents deep from the psyche come out, they come up, and they want to be interacted with. And he says, we are kind of guided through the unconscious, through these forces, into a certain direction. Similarly, with the example that I had with my apartment, the first steps were the first three issues I saw. But the journey was everything beyond. If you would ask me, I would say, like, yeah, in the apartment, there's only three issues. But then I would find out, I think I had like 20 or 30. I wrote them all down. And it's crazy that they were all there, but I just did not see them. I was completely blind to them. So this is really step-by-step approach that might seem small and insignificant, right? So I thought, okay, this stain, it's not important. It's just a stain. I can clean it anytime. At the same time, it blocked my whole view for the apartment. It blocked me for the whole journey because that stain was there quite some time, a couple of years, and I never paid much attention to it. But right beyond it was kind of the whole, let's say, psychological journey of cleaning the apartment, but also to find out that, oh, what am I blind to? So the next logical step, that's what Jung advises for people, how they unfold their psyche, how they live their life. It's the next logical step. But doing this with conviction, this is a very important word, because there's a way to live consciously and there's a way to live unconsciously. Unconsciously means very passive, reactive. Things happen to you, but you don't really recognize them. You don't identify with them. You don't take responsibility for them. But consciousness is with purpose. It's with a goal. Similar like, I want to clean my apartment, I want to fix everything in it. Suddenly there's a goal, there's a conviction, there's a purpose with doing these things, there's a plan. And this is then a completely different thing, right? I lived for many, many years in the apartment, but only then I really engaged with it. Well, I engage with it every time I clean it, but on that level, I only engage with it very consciously, with attention. Consciousness means active, willfully attention. But we have all these things coming up. And this is then the things to look out for. So we live our lives step by step. We know that our perception is shaped by our psyche. We know that kind of everything is related to us. But at the same time, things come up all by themselves. And this can be thoughts, that can be images. Those are associations, dreams, fantasies, projections, feelings that can cause something in us. So something happens to us. And automatically there comes this plethora of different ways how the unconscious, as a counterpart, interacts with consciousness. So the psyche is more than just the things that we are aware of, but all the other things also. So even me now telling you certain things might bring up certain memories, certain ideas, certain images, associations that you have. This is not you reacting. There's something inside the psyche reacting to that, but you become aware of that. You are like, oh, I have this thought, I have this image, I have this dream or fantasy, or I have this emotion about a certain thing. This is all information that comes to you. And this all communicates something. So it's worth paying attention to. It's communicating your future personality, basically. So you being born out of your own psyche is already communicating through all these different ways. And Jung has here this quote about it. Everything in the unconscious seeks outward manifestation. It is a kind of communication happening there. So if one wants to live Jungian, it means to pay attention to these things. This is why, for example, dream interpretation comes up as a Jungian concept, to say like, okay, we have these experiences at night, these situations, these images, these figures that come up and interact with us. And the thought is then, okay, what do they mean? And they are part of one's own psyche that we are not aware of yet. It's very interesting. Like in a dream, it's only you. It's hyper-subjective. And everything in a dream is you. It's not something out. So every figure, all the situation, the landscape, everything is you and your own psyche. And you can have their conversation with yourself, basically, when you talk to the dream figures or they talk to you. It's the different parts of the psyche interacting with each other. So living Jungian means paying attention to the things that come up. And you might have heard about these things already in therapy. How does it make you feel? What do you think about that? This is already an active engagement with these unconscious contents that come up that are not yet fully manifested. They're not fully integrated. They're not really there. So this is already an interesting exercise to just note down and record. I hear something. I experience something. What are my thoughts? What are my images that come up or the associations that I have? And really watch oneself. It's a kind of one objectifies oneself. One is not only in the situation, but also outside the situation as a kind of metacognition, observing oneself like, oh, I am thinking this. Oh, I'm dreaming this. Oh, I have these kind of feelings that are coming up related to this topic, this person, this situation. Even up to the point of bodily things. So when I have a thought or image, this is something psychic in the back of the mind. But Jung says also through the body, the unconscious communicates with us. And when people trip or when they misspeak, misremember things or have accidents, he says, they're not really in harmony. There's something happening there. Something blocked them. And Jung always says, oh, this is something trying to establish contact and communication and bringing up something new into the field of perception of a person. And it is then very, very personal. So this is then the part when you're living your life step by step. You notice the things that come up as thoughts or emotions. The important thing is to reflect on them, to become aware of them, but also think about what they mean. How do they connect to you? And here's a quote by Jung about that. Where lies the difference between my behavior and that of an animal that unreservedly fulfills the will of God? The only difference I can see is that I am conscious of what I do and reflect upon it. So this is really one big difference of human beings and other animals, because human beings are also animals, but we have consciousness. And this means really reflecting, like, why did I do this? Why did this image come up? Why do I always have this very strong emotion towards a person? And this is already a beginning of a journey. It is, for example, the writer of the book 48 Laws of Power. He was a completely pushover. He lived his life, did his work, and was very unsuccessful. He worked a lot, got not so much money, not got promoted, got ignored, and all these different things, until one fateful day. And that fateful day was when he asked himself, why is this always happening to me? And this is already reflection. This is already consciously engaging with what is happening to one and also the effect that it has on one. And this is how he then wrote the book 48 Laws of Power. And this is how he became rich and famous. By living his life and becoming aware of it, becoming aware of his life and really questioning it. So, how is a way of reflecting on them when something then comes up, something you experienced? And this is what the next quote is about. The sublimation or progress of qualitative change consists in an unfolding of totality into four parts, four times, which means nothing less than it's becoming conscious. When psychic contents are split up into four aspects, it means that they have subjected to discrimination by the four orienting functions of consciousness. Which begs the question, what are the four orienting functions of consciousness? They are sensation, thinking, feeling, and intuition. You might already be familiar with those in the context of typology. Jung had a very extensive thought and concept about human personality that he says, oh, people have a certain way how they interact with the world and how they experience and process the world. When they're even born, people have a personality. I think this is intuitively clear to everyone. And Jung saw there really how they receive information, how they process information. And that means you can be one of those four as a, let's say, favorite type. This is now your favorite hand. You have four hands and one is your favorite. So sensation is about what is present, being even aware that there is something. Thinking is about what it is. Feeling is, how do you relate to it? Is it positive? Is it negative? And intuition is really not what it is now, but where did it come from? What was it before? And what is it in the future, potentially? And Jung says, every person kind of has a favorite function. So a thinking type is really into labeling things and giving things names, right? A feeling type is more in they approach the world, whether they like something or they don't like something. But they're then very sophisticated tastes. They can really bring it down. They like this very small thing, not, but they like the other thing they do. And intuition, this is then very often artists, so people that have wild creative ideas. And sensation types, they're really down to earth. They believe what they see and not much more. So they're really much in the present. It's not that one type is better than the other. And actually, you need all of them. So Jung says we have a totality of the psyche, which means we have all of these different functions, and we should be competent in all of them. But by having one favorite one, having one favorite hand, we might approach the world only in a thinking manner, ignoring the feeling. Or we might only approach it in the intuition manner, ignoring the sensation. So what he says, to be really competent and to really bring things into consciousness, we have to break them down in the four functions. And this is then a conscious approach. An unconscious approach was to mingle everything together. So, for example, something negative happens to you. First, you need to realize that you're feeling bad. And this is a really wild experience, to not know that you're actually not feeling well. But then also to state like, okay, what am I actually feeling? What is coming up inside of me? Is it fear? Is it disgust? Is it anger? And this already mirrors a little bit the psychological language of therapy. And then the feeling is, okay, what do you feel about it? Like, how do you relate it? Do you like it? Don't you like it? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? And then also the question, okay, where does it come from? Not necessarily from the situation, but like from the past, for example, and what could it evolve to? So everything that comes up and that gets reflected upon needs to be, let's say, broken down in these four aspects. What it is, even to be aware of it, what it is, how to relate to it, and also what it could be and where it's coming from. And I have here on the right a mandala drawn by Jung, because he sees there really this quaternity of the mandala, that it's very often 4, 8, 16, 32, different parts relating to each other. He says, yeah, this is symbolizing the way of things becoming conscious, of becoming integrated, to have one of those four pathways into our consciousness, into our ego. So we don't, of course, only have to passively have things coming up. This happens all the time. The unconscious comes up to us all the time with thoughts, ideas, images, and as long as we pay attention to it. But we can also bring things up willfully. We don't only have to do it passively, we can do it actively, which means we can try to activate certain parts of our personality. For example, what writers are doing, they might dress like the characters they're trying to write. So they would try to speak like them, try to have the same mannerisms or habits, to bring really something forth in them, because this is really the thing. You're not one unified thing, so you're multiple things. And by doing things that, for example, are new, you become very, very conscious of the things. When you get a new task, a new problem, a new challenge in your life, this brings something forth. This brings forth images, thoughts, feelings, emotions, certain behavior that you can then, of course, can observe and act on it. So Jung had different ways how to bring up things from the unconscious. And he would do this with his patients in dream analysis. One is called amplification. And amplification is really thinking about what does it make you think of. So you dream of a horse, for example. Okay, what do you associate with a horse? What are all the things that come together when you think of a horse and pay attention to that? Did you have experiences with horses? Do you like horses? All these different things. And active imagination is really to consciously, purposefully go into the unconscious to have there an experience awake. It's like an awake dream. And rather than it happens passively to you, you can do it actively with a purpose and talk there with the figures of the unconscious with a purpose, with a question. What are you doing? What are you doing here? What do you want from me? And another thing is culture. And I think people do this already when they experience art or music or stories. Let's say it feels good. It feels cathartic. It feels connecting. When you have a very good story, a very good book, a very good movie, a very good song, it activates something inside of you. But at the same time, you can also engage there consciously with things that are, for example, challenging to you. Asking yourself, why is it challenging? What does it make me feel? Why could this be the case? So it is there really purposefully steering consciousness and bringing oneself into a situation, because you can never know how a situation is until you go there. Meaning you can have a difficult discussion with a friend, with a family member, with somebody from work, and you will learn there a lot of things. And the thing you will really learn about foremost is about yourself. Then again, what feelings, what thoughts, what emotions came up, what reactions, how did you behave? And this is then the thing where you bring up really things from the unconscious, then again, to experience and reflect on them. And to bring it also back to the quote that Jung said before, the things in the unconscious, they look for a manifestation. They want to be outside. They want to get a form. So this is what Jung would do with his patients, for example. He would let them draw. Jung started his own brand of psychology called analytical psychology because he saw that Freudian psychology stopped working after a certain age. Meaning Freudian psychology very much is centered around getting people out of the psychology of their parents, out of the basement of their parents, so that they find a partner, establish their own life, have a career, start a family, all these different things that people would not do because they're still caught in the psychology of the mother or the father and the family. They're not independent of that. So that was and is the task of Freudian psychology. But then there are those people who are out of that, but they still have things that block them in their normal life. And this is where Jung would let people draw. And then again, I think you can already like guess what happens now. It comes out for you to experience it. It's very, very different if it's inside your head as an idea, a thought, or if you bring it down, for example, to paper, to you give it form, because then you objectified it. You took the subjective thing, you objectified it, and you can observe it. You can take it apart again. Like, what does it remind you of? How do you feel about it? So this is what this Jung's quote is about. Perhaps you suffer from an abominable headache, a pressure in your head, and your analyst suggests that you make a fantasy or drawing about it. So you produce an amazing drawing, all sorts of illusionary things, and your headache is gone. And this is like really true and backed by science, the therapeutic effect of writing things down. What they did, they took people who had a pretty difficult surgery, which bound them to the bed at the hospital for quite some time. And they made two groups where they said, okay, one group, they just try to recover. And the other group is supposed to write down what their plan is once they get out. What do they want to do? And how will they cope with problems that they might have? And then they checked on both groups how their healing was after being let go from the hospital. And the interesting thing is, the other group that wrote down what they would do and how it would be had a way quicker recovery. And it didn't even matter whether they did the things or not. It was all about the writing down. Give it form. This is why it's so important to talk about things with another person. And people already feel that internally, that something is bothering me. I need to talk with someone about it, because you kind of have to hear yourself talking about it. You say things and you're like, oh no, that's not completely true, but it's like, it's maybe this or maybe this and even this. And you experience yourself talking about the topic and then realizing, oh no, that's not the topic. That's not the thing. And Jung lived his own life like that. This is why I show you the sandcastle. When there was the breakup between him and Freud, he really wanted to engage with his psyche and his unconscious. He had these visions. His career fell apart, and he really was kind of lost in his own life. So he returned back to something that he did as a child, which was creating sandcastles and villages. And there, he did this until he had the kind of feeling that it became better. And he had now a purpose in life and could see where it might go. There was something inside of him that needed to be activated, his child of the past. And he had certain ideas and concepts that not necessarily can be expressed in words, but they can be expressed in sculpturing or drawing. And this is then what he also did in his life. He drew the pictures and read books. He built his own tower in Bollingen. And he did a lot of artistic things because he says the things in the psyche they want to manifest, they want to get outside, they want to be experienced, meaning they need to have an objective form. They need to be outside to be then observed by you as a consciousness and reflected upon and then integrated. So Jung said, I'm no artist. I only try to get things into stone of which I think it is important that they appear in hard matter and stay on for a reasonably long time. Or I try to give form to something that seems to be in the stone and makes me restless. Again, there's an unconscious uneasiness that pushes someone, like in this case Jung, but also potentially you, forward to do something. And this needs to be expressed through word, through action. So, what is then life is about experiencing yourself? What about yourself? What about you as a person? And one very important part of Jungian psychology, and I now mentioned it multiple times, is that you are not a singular thing. You're not a singular entity, but rather your multiplicity. You have multiple forces inside of you that you kind of get into a relationship with and that you kind of need to get to know and understand and give them, again, expression. So the so-called unity of consciousness is an illusion. It is really a wish dream. We like to think we are one, but we are not. Most decidedly not. We are not really masters in our own house. And I think everybody is familiar with that when you really want to do something, but something inside of you is kind of blocking you. It's not only laziness, but it can also be fear. It can be unconscious criticism that one has. So something is really blocking the way forward and makes one stumble and makes one guess. So Jung says not only we have a personality in the psyche, but also all these other parts have it. So every part of our psychology has a personal character, and it appears in your unconscious like a little person. And this is on what we experience in dreams, for example. These are split off parts of our psyche and our psychology. And these Jung identifies as complexes or archetypes or anima animus, as shadow or as the self itself. Beings that can be interacted with. And those are beings because you can build a relationship with it. You cannot really build a relationship with an emotion or thought, but you can with a kind of personality. And Jung says these drives, instincts, and archetypes, and all these different characters, they are personalities, as they are also been represented in Greek mythologies as gods that are associated with certain ideas, with certain circumstances, like Dionysus, the god of rebirth, the god that kind of blows apart and creates something new, associated with spring, with ecstasy, with dancing, with intoxication, because this is a situation where something new comes up. So it's not Dionysus the accountant, but rather Dionysus the party animal. So further investigation of the collective material of the unconscious presented by schizophrenics and by the dreams of neurotics and normal people elicited typical figures or motives which have their counterparts in myth and may therefore be called archetypes. These are not to be thought of as inherited ideas. Rather, they are equivalent of the pattern of behavior in biology. This is why I said art. This is why when you want to experience certain things, to experience culture, art, stories, or even places, because they activate something inside of you. You are a reacting system to the situation that you are in. You're not driving it, but you're also being driven by the situation. So it is a network then of relationships that comes into play for these different parts of yourself you need to build a relationship with. That means also the unwanted parts, the difficult parts, the scary parts or the scared parts. So when Jung, for example, talks about shadow integration, and shadow is a big topic. I see it when the podcast episodes about shadow, they are amongst the most popular because people have this feeling that there's dark side about them. There he says it has to do with statesmanship or diplomacy. It is an individual thing to find there a relationship with that entity and with the thing and should be treated as something different separately. So, Jung has there a very different approach in the sense of just because there is something negatively does not mean that it's bad, but that the very, very important thing is, and this is one key insight of Jungian psychology and Jungian thought and how to approach the psyche. We should not try to get rid of a neurosis, meaning something bad, like a depression, a bad thought, a bad emotion, but rather to experience what it means, what it has to teach, what its purpose is. We should even learn to be thankful for it. Otherwise, we pass it by and miss the opportunity of getting to know ourselves as we really are. It is really that in our most difficult moments and on our biggest challenges, we develop the most and we get to know most about ourselves and we learn the most about ourselves. And this is what Jungian psychology is to a big part about. Because beyond the shadow, there's everything, all the development, everything that's there and should come out. And of course, it feels very unpleasant. It's similar when you're in school and you have to give a presentation and you never gave a presentation in your whole life before. You learn a lot in these situations about yourself. But also when you have a difficult argument with your partner, when there's a tragedy in your life with your family. This is really an opportunity to learn a lot about yourself and to develop. And it's very much associated with these strong negative emotions. It's not that life is sunshine and roses, but it also doesn't mean that life is only the bad things, but rather the bad things are there to be expressed, experienced, codified, reflected upon. Because this is then where all the development lies beyond. And in doing that, there are certain pitfalls one could fall into. And this is what Jung basically says, how this psychological development, this bringing forth of your own personality could be hindered, where it could run in the, let's say, wrong direction. One is really about being one-sided, meaning you're very, very much focused only on one thing. The psyche is very complex. It's very vast. It has many different parts. You have many different parts, many parts you're not aware of. So it is wrong to think, oh, I'm only one thing. Jung says it's a problem, especially for men, to be very identified with the function that they fulfill in society, the status that they have, the job that they have, the reputation that they have. It's very much more than that they are. And when you, for example, a thinking person, likely you have built a career on thinking about things, being very accurate, categorizing things, naming things, structuring things. Very likely you live out another part, which is the feeling. How do you really feel about those things? And this is then the things that come out all by themselves negatively, as a negative experience. I did not know what got into me. I completely flipped out. Then again, taking accountability, watching it, reflecting on it, taking it apart, trying to bring it into another form. Another pitfall, and this is that Jung bemoaned himself, living your life and experience yourself and bring your force is not about doing it alone. And very often individuation sounds like that. It's not about, it's only you and you do it all in your head. I already tried to establish like, oh no, it's going out in the world, actually doing something, throwing yourself in the world without knowing what to do and see what happens. So life is also being in a relationship with all the things around you, with your family, with your partner, with your society, and even your culture. You're not a separate thing. You are living in a network of things. Not only in your psyche is a network of beings, but also outside. There's a network of beings that you should interact with and have a relationship with. And those can really be helpful and point out things to you, especially people that know you for a long time. And I think people do that already intuitively, that they look for the people that know them already to say, okay, I have this problem, I have this weird situation, because they can most likely point out, yeah, that does not sound like you. Why are you doing this? Why are you thinking this? Another thing is to not identify with the things that are happening to you. And this is what I mean here with getting lost in the aesthetics, because Jung very often noticed that he had patients who experienced their dreams, but they were only caught in the images and said, oh, this is all very pretty, this is all very nice, without realizing that it's related to them. So this is the big thing that I also pointed out in the beginning, your life, your experience, this is all reacted to you. This is a reaction to you. And when you have strong emotions, this is like a fallacy that Jung says people then have, is they associate an emotion with a specific person, specific situation. It's like, yeah, he made me feel bad. It's like kind of something bad as a feeling came up inside of you interacting with him, which is then already a different approach to it, to a little bit distance it from that, not saying identified with it, but at the same time, not necessarily only saying like, oh yeah, I experienced something. So Jung says he had a lot of patients who were schizophrenics, people with a psychosis, and he said they had wonderful, wonderful individuation dreams, but there was no one home to really recognize them. So building the connection of the things that are happening to you and the reactions you have to say like, oh yeah, that's me, that belongs to me, is already a huge step forward. But it's also to say like, oh yeah, this is all very nice. So identifying and getting possessed, this is really when you think, ah, it's only me and the psyche. Everything is me. It's related to you, but not everything is you. Meaning not every thought is necessarily coming from you, but it can take you over. And this is then a very dangerous situation to be in. You're unconscious that you are not really conscious in the situation, that where something is coming from. Something is driving you, like a devil. They even say that in German. You say, ah, I don't know what devil wrote me. I have no idea what this devil did to me. Another thing is, and this is then the very hard part about Jungian psychology, is you cannot automatically know what something means. But if something comes from the unconscious, it's a symbol. It's symbolizing something. It's not literal. Meaning, when you dream about flying, for example, it doesn't mean you should try to jump out of a window. It's rather that something that happened inside of you is best represented in a dream by flying. Meaning, the unconscious tries to communicate with you, but it uses its own kind of language, which is also a little bit hard to learn. Or let's say for modern humans, it's harder to understand, but because we're very consciously aware, very consciously developed. And those are how people thought hundreds or thousands or 10,000s of years ago. But we can learn that. That's still within ourselves. And another very big thing is, even when we have a goal, when we have attention and we want to do something, there's something Jung calls libido leak. That means we want to do something, but we see that our attention is drifting away. And we become very interested in other things. Our focus moves. And he has this example from this one patient. And he realized every time when the discussions became tough, she would fall in love with another person. Some person that she just met. And heads over heels. And he's the greatest. And I want to live my life with him. And all these different things. And he says, yeah, she's running away. She's running away from her problem. She's not engaging with it. But rather, her attention moves away. And I can sympathize with that. Because I know when I was a child and I had an exam in school in front of me, the day before, I made the most incredible Lego constructions imaginable. like my wildest ideas came up there. So there it's important to keep the focus, not to get distracted. So these are kind of common pitfalls that one might fall into when actively engaging with one's psyche, which is not easy. It's a journey. It's very complicated. This is why Jung wrote so many books about it, because it is not self-evident. And we need to learn and we need to pay attention. So summarizing what it means to experience oneself through one's own life, it is about that life is about experiencing yourself. It's about life and living it one step at a time. And it's about confronting oneself. This is what reflection is. This is what purposefully bringing things up is. You're confronting yourself and asking why. Why do I think this? Why do I feel that? And realize that you are a complex network of different forces, different ideas, and things that need to be taken care of and that you can build a relationship with, which is nice, which is awesome, but you need to be aware of that, that you're not one singular thing. And for that, really conscious awareness is, for Jung, everything is about consciousness, paying attention, reflecting, integrating, connecting, and so on. And you can do this. This is not a single thing that you can do. And this is what I want to give you in this topic, because we had this roughly a month ago when we talked about dancing and movement. We had one participant and she was really into raves and saw them as really, really meaningful. And we had another person who was really into praying and another person who was really into writing. It is not about the specific act that you do, but rather how you engage with it and how you integrate it into your own life. So how to live one's life, how to experience one's life. And Jung has this quote for that. Life that just happens in and for itself is not real life, so a passive life. It is real only when it is known, so when it's paid attention to. Only a unified personality can experience life, not that personality which is split up into partial aspects. So when someone is broken apart in these multiplicities, they also don't experience life because they're very unconscious about it and they're just driven passively through it. And this would summarize the event and conclude my talk about the self-help Jung and the different ways how to engage with oneself, to how to unfold one's personality. And I want to thank you very much for your attention. And I really, really hope there's something you could take for your own life and the next things you want to try and the next things you want to reflect upon. And yeah. That would conclude the presentation. This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. If you liked today's presentation, consider joining others in supporting the help desk with a donation on buymeacoffee.com. And if this episode meant something to you, share it with a friend. I help others to find this podcast more easily by rating it in the podcast app of your choice. And of course, you're more than welcome to join the live discussions after the presentation part during the events. The links are in the description. See you next time.